to remind the commission that we are very pleased to have with us tonight representatives from DLDOT. Mr. Brockenbrough and Mr. Cote are with us this evening. They are here to advise the commission. They are not here to take questions from the public or to be grilled on traffic matters in general. They're here to advise us on this particular application. Gentlemen, if you have any questions for them, you may direct them, you may ask them, and they will be happy to answer them. If anyone, when it comes time to take public testimony, has a question, and those questions, of course, are all directed to the commission. They're not directed to the applicant or anyone else. If we feel that we need to know the answer to that question and we think that the folks from DLDOT might have the answer, I'll certainly be happy to ask them. With that, we'll start with you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as you know, there is considerable opposition here. I understand there's an attorney representing at least a group of them. So some of my questions that I might normally ask when there's not someone in opposition, I may hold in reserve until after the opposition's had to speak. That having been said, I do have a few questions I'd like to ask of the applicant. Some of it are technical questions. Some of it may be just a matter of typos. So first, Mr. Fuqua, I want to commend you on the 25-foot setback from state wetlands. And we both know that that's something that you do not have to provide. From the 404. You know, as you well know, I get 404 and state wetlands clumped together because they're all wetlands. But having said that, we both know that the 404 does not, there's nowhere in the regs that requires any setbacks from that. So I do want to commend the applicant for providing for that. Even if there is discussion saying 100 foot's appropriate, but that being said, that's what the ordinance doesn't provide for any protection of the 404s, but you are. And as you noted, the adjoining property does not have the 404 protections. With that being said, I do have some questions in terms of how you wound up with the net density. Some of it may be my misunderstanding versus, so I may ask some clarification from your engineer as well as from our staff. But my understanding and how we come up with the net density is that, of course, we take out the state wetlands, which you did. And then it was my understanding that we take out 25% of the remaining is what
25% or the actual right-of-way.
Okay. So I missed that phrase, the actual, because when I was reviewing the ordinance this afternoon, the 25% is what stood out for me.
Yeah, it's 25% or the actual right-of-way, whichever is less. I think Mr. Lane can verify that.
Well, typically, the projects that we reviewed over the last many years has been the 25% include the right-of-way and probably the majority of the stormwater management features.
All right. Okay. So then we've got a slight little difference perhaps on that. Second thing that I noticed is when you talk about the setbacks, side yard, rear yard, your exhibit booklet talks about side yard setback of 8 feet and a rear yard setback of 8 feet. But when I look at your big drawing, it had side yard setback of 8 feet and rear yard of 10 feet. And it was my understanding that the setbacks for side and the rear is 10 foot. Is that?
Well, I think in the MR, the side yard setbacks are 10 feet, but subject to the RPC ordinance, which gives the Planning Commission discretion to name the setbacks as we request or as you deem appropriate. In other words, it says the regular setbacks need not apply to an RPC. It's subject to the discretion of the Planning Commission.
Right. And as you may have heard earlier this evening, that's an area of a real concern for me in that we're having developers come in with one set of setbacks, and then later they request a reduction in that.
Well, the justification, of course, would be that one of the benefits of the RPC is you're able to reduce the lot size in an MR district from 10,000 to 7,500 square feet. And I think a fair argument argument can be made that you also need a proportional reduction in the setback if you're having a smaller lot. So the setback, the lot goes from 10,000 to 7,500. The request is that the setback go from 10 feet to 8 feet.
But if you also, with it saying along that same line, if you look at the cluster subdivision ordinance where you are allowed to have the 7,500 square foot lots, that they also have a 10-foot side yard setback as well. So it's, but it.
Well, that would be all the more reason not to do a cluster.
But that being said, on your map, the minimum zoning requirements are wrong. They should be 10 foot.
Second.
Mr. Johnson, just to kind of, you know, Mr. Fuqua did have something on that. I mean, you're going from 10,000 to 7,500, which the RPC allows you to do, but at the same time with 8-foot setbacks, because you're going to smaller lots, I mean, the goal of the RPC is to provide a more open space. So you're trying to allow for a structure so that you are providing more open space, in which in this case, you know, we're 43% of the open space. And going to smaller lots and, you know, reducing the setbacks to 8 feet, you know, that just makes it so that a structure can be put on there with the opportunity to provide more open space. If not, then of course the lots would, or the setbacks would have to grow, the lots would have to grow, you know, 2 more feet on both sides, in which the whole thing is to accomplish the more open space.
Well, just so we have an understanding that as I understand it, the minimum requirement is 10 foot. Yes, the commission has the authority to reduce that, but the minimum is still 10 feet. So,
well, again, the only clarification I would say is that in the MR district, the side yard setback is a required 10 feet.
Yes.
But in an RPC, it specifically says that the required setback need not apply, and it is discretionary with the commission.
Okay, but that being said, I don't want to get into a legal discussion or argument about it, but still, to me, is 10 feet.
I can't argue that.
Okay, thank you. Trying to move on. There's an out parcel that you're talking about. Is that not, as I understand,
that's not included in the 126.88 acres.
And is that something that's being reserved for future development, or is that?
No, it's actually Mr. Marshall's house.
Okay.
He resides, I think it's here, right around in here. Right in here.
Okay.
And that was, it's part of this parcel, but not exactly.
This parcel here, it's where the landscaping is. They got an existing landscaping company.
Yes.
And the house.
And there's a lot line adjustment for the house, but the house is actually its own separate parcel now.
But they're not included in the 126 acres.
Right. Okay. Well, I just want to clarify whether or not the 5 acres is something that might be subject to future development.
Yeah, that's what this is.
That's the out parcel. That was a matter of the previous public hearing we had.
Yeah, that was a conditional use for the landscape company.
Yes. Okay. What I'd like to hear is how this is a, and I missed it, but I want to hear how this is considered a superior living environment, and what your design ingenuity is for this proposal versus a standard subdivision that you're, as you well know, you're allowed 2 per acre. So how's this considered a superior living environment, which is part of the RPC?
Well, the main thing is the creation of open space. I think, what's the percentage? 43% open space, which you wouldn't acquire in a standard subdivision. Already noted, we're creating a 25-foot buffer from the federal wetlands.
Okay.
Mr. Fuqua, hold on just a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, please. You don't have to comment to each other after every comment that gets made up here. Just hold it. If you can't hold it, take it out in the lobby and talk all you want out there. But it's very disruptive to the commission, and it's disruptive to the people around you who are trying to listen to what's being said. Go ahead, sir.
So as I said, in addition to the open space, we do have the buffers, which you might not get in a subdivision, and in fact, as you noted, but not in some subdivisions.
We have the recreational amenity complex, walking path along Old Landing Road. It's a mixed, townhouse, a single family development, again, similar to the type of design in Sawgrass, and quite frankly, similar to many of the MRRPCs you've seen in the past. As opposed to a cookie cutter subdivision, that's basically the main difference. Again, there's two aspects to this. That's the RPC aspect. The other aspect is the MR. And again, this is zoned AR right now. It's surrounded by MR zoning. It's certainly my point and my argument that it's entitled to be, not entitled, but it's certainly appropriate to be zoned MR. Why would everyone else in that area be treated as MR zoning and this one be carved out as AR zoning? So it's served by county sewer. It's served by central water. It's in, as I said, the mixed residential area. It just seemed under our comp plan that that's the appropriate use.
Okay. In your calculation of the 43% of open space, is that including the wetlands?
I'll have to defer to Zach on that. I believe so.
There's 46 acres of wetland. 54.6 acres of open space, in which there are, again, 16.66 acres of state and 4.41 acres for a total of 21.07 acres. So subtracting the two, you get 33 acres of open space, which is the buffers,
community recreation.
I mean, there's a significant amount of buffers along the Old Landing Road, which is going to be landscape. There's buffers around the whole entire perimeter. You got the open space. You got the pool, clubhouse, half basketball court, tennis courts, dog park.
Okay. I just want to clarify that. The overall design ingenuity that you did put into it in terms of the buffer, like you said, from the wetlands, as well as the buffer from the Old Landing Road. In terms of, I know you're comparing it with the one Sawgrass across the street. Unfortunately, when I was doing my calculations, the information I had did not include the percentage of wetlands. But as you know, there's a number of other adjoining MRRPCs. In fact, it seems like they're all MRRPCs surrounding you. But do you have the calculations on the density of the other adjoining properties?
The two MR subdivisions?
Well, you have the Warrington Creek, which is the one across the street, which is the one that when you pull out the wetlands, you're winding up with 3.7. But you also have the other Sawgrass.
Yeah, Sawgrass North.
Yeah.
Sawgrass North is a little bit unusual because that was originally approved as a subdivision. It was a straight-up subdivision. And then what happened, after a couple of years, I think the same developer of Sawgrass South was also going to develop Sawgrass North. So Sawgrass North came back before you and the county to transfer from a subdivision to an MRRPC, ironically, for the sole reason of having smaller lots and smaller setbacks, because that was the product that was being built in Sawgrass South, and they wanted to basically maintain the same type of a design in Sawgrass North. So I'm not sure what that density was, but it would have been an MR subdivision density, so it was somewhere under 4, obviously, but I don't know exactly what it was.
Well, my calculations on that one was 1.96 per acre, as they had 226 single-family lots on 115.29 acres. Again, with this information before me, I'm not privy to how much of it would have been the wetlands.
I didn't look at that because I knew it had been a subdivision and wasn't really similar because there's no townhouses in Sawgrass North.
Right. And the same goes for villages of Old Landing 1 and villages of Old Landing 2 that are classified according to the information I have, as MRRPCs, although they do not include townhouses either.
Yeah, I don't think they're MRRPCs. I think they're just MR subdivisions as far as I know.
Like I said, but based on the information I'm looking at, and that, you know, you may in fact be correct there, but there I'm looking at densities of 1.53 and 1.81, you know, respectively. So, again, not having, being aware of how much of wetlands might be contained in those units as well.
I would mention that there was also a recent cluster subdivision that was approved, I believe, by the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Council. I don't know how recent. I don't know. It's right on Old Landing Road. I don't know the name of it. Something Ridge, I believe.
Redden Ridge.
I believe that density is about 2.4. I think they utilized the
bonus density.
The bonus density.
Yes, they did.
So there's a mixture of densities along the road, and I think Sawgrass South is the best comparison to our site.
Okay. This may be a question for your traffic engineer, but according to the information that was provided to me by the Planning and Zoning Office, currently on Old Landing Road from Warrington Road South, and this is including the mobile home park as well as the campground, that there's now approved 1,988 housing units. I don't know if that's something that the engineer was aware of.
It's DJ Hughes again. I handed my TIS to Lawrence, but there's, I think it's pages like 31 through 35, list all the committed developments. Off the top of my head, I don't know the number, but I know Redden Ridge, I believe, was about 75 units that was approved earlier. That's included in there. Sawgrass North and South are both included in there. And there's, like I said, there's 8 total that are included. And I know it's a fair amount of traffic.
So what's being proposed today then is about a 17% increase in the number of approved housing units on that section of Old Landing Road.
Being proposed in an area where the county said that's where you should put it.
Right. I'd like to refer to your exhibit, the Osprey Point exhibit. I think there's a couple pieces there that piqued my interest, and let me bear with me as I find those. And would you or have you or someone go over for me again? As part of the environmentally sensitive developing areas, that's number 4 on page 315. They talk about safeguarding the natural areas and mitigating roadway congestion without stifling tourism and real estate markets. How's your project going to do that? First, we can talk about the environmental issues, how you're going to protect the runoffs from the inland bays. Because I know you touched upon that with your stormwater management ponds,
we have to go through, as any project in the state of Delaware, we have to do stormwater management and erosion control construction plans, which actually any land that's disturbed, we have to submit a plan showing how we can control the 210 and 100-year storm, as well as all the construction activity that happens in that area. So there has to be, and then there's a CCR reviewer that's required during construction that writes a report once a week that basically shows that the site's being stabilized during construction, so there's no complete runoff into the inland bays. Second, we are in the inland bays watershed, so we have to abide by certain regulations with Denerec and also the Sussex Conservation District, where there again, when we do our stormwater management submission to them as far as reduction of phosphorus and nitrous of 40%, we have to submit a report showing that. So all those environmental components of construction will be addressed during the stormwater management, and also the storm events that are required by the state will be addressed in that report.
Because again, I was looking for that information.
And also for an environmental side too. I mean, I believe we submitted or the JD. The JD has been approved, as Mr. Fuqua stated, by the Army Corps of Engineers, December 23rd. We did finally get the letter. So that was there again. We did a wetlands delineation. It was submitted through the proper channels, and we got a preliminary JD that was submitted.
I have a copy of that I'll submit. I didn't submit it because I didn't get it until after the 10 days before the hearing. It's not really an exhibit, but I just thought I would wait until after this hearing. I mentioned that we had received it. And if I can just add to that, Zach, will there be any water runoff from our property onto the adjacent developments?
No. And if there again, you're going to hear tonight flooding. There's pictures. We've seen it. We know it. The pond, there's no stormwater management out there right now. The ponds that are out there right now are just ponds.
Let me ask you a pretty basic question. Is it your opinion that the development of this site, as you're proposing to do it, is going to alleviate the flooding problems that these people are experiencing?
It will improve. I mean, it's impossible to say it's going to alleviate every problem, but is it going to improve? Most definitely. There's going to be discharge point through this whole project, which does not exist as of today, which gets water from point A to point B.
Right.
Right now, it rains, it sits, okay?
So would it be your position that whatever water is falling on your site and running off somewhere else right now is gonna be contained on your site and disposed of in an orderly fashion that doesn't flood your neighbors?
That is correct.
All right, thank you.
Zach, could you also just mention for the record the water quality that would be discharged into Arnold Creek or wherever the discharge is, can you just address
quality, of course. We have to, there's quality and quantity requirements from Conservation District in Denerick, okay? Right now, there's no quality. I mean, when it rains, it goes to those ponds that are out there. It might get pumped from one pond to another pond, but when it runs over into the marshes, okay? We have a requirement to meet quality requirements, and those requirements will have to be, per our stormwater management design, in ponds, infiltration strips, or bog retention areas will have to be treated. So, but when it's discharged, it meets quality requirements.
And I appreciate your information. I think that's important to the public that's here now, as well as to the commission, in terms of understanding what measures that you do have to take in order to protect the environment.
Yeah. May I jump in and ask one other question?
Sure. Do I have a choice?
Not actually. what recourse do the neighbors have if the system doesn't work the way it's supposed to?
Well, there's the Conservation District, and then there's ultimately Denerick, which there again, if there is an occurrence where this property, after construction or during construction, floods onto another person adjacent property, there is measures that they take, i.e. fines, shutdown, whatnot, that they will have to deal with. So it's our intention that all this runoff from this site is channeled through the stormwater management system that will be designed for this site and then discharged into an appropriate discharge point to meet state requirements.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, go ahead.
Mr. Johnson, as to your second point, I think it was about the mitigation of traffic impact.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as you know, a developer can't do anything without DLDOT is the one that makes that decision. The county doesn't make that decision. It's purely something that's determined by DLDOT. They are the people with the expertise. The county defers to them. And as an applicant, we do what DLDOT says needs to be done. So the mitigation of our impact of these additional homes on this property, on that road, will be done by what DLDOT tells us has to be done, in a fair, equitable manner.
And part of that, as I understand it, is including the widening of the road in front of your property, as well as the turn lanes and the...
You can answer that, and I'll
follow. No, I mean, all I can tell you is we have to do what DLDOT tells us.
Yeah, and that's right. And to kind of expand on that just a little bit, is that we need to get, before we get any approvals and before if this body fares that this project move forward, during the construction process of the, or design process and permitting of this, we go through DLDOT, and before a record plan or a shovel's put in the ground, we need to address those issues, which any issues that's going to be required by DLDOT based on the number of the amount of traffic or existing conditions, we have to address, get an entrance permit before anything can even happen. So, I mean, that's all part of the process. We have to be able to do that.
And as I understand from your testimony earlier, part in addition to the road improvements, you're also going to have to participate in the improvements of the intersection there at Warrington and Old Landing Road.
That is correct.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to reserve questions for later, if I may.
You may indeed.
Thank you.
You may indeed. We'll move on to Mr. Burton.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. let's stay on DLDOT a little bit. Can you just review what improvements are going to have to be made to that road?
Are you interested more on Old Landing Road along our site frontage or up at the all-way stop?
First on the site.
Okay, for the site frontage, the access, this is, I believe, opposite Bonair Drive, and it will have a right turn lane, and there's already a left turn lane for Bonair Drive, so we will be constructing a right turn lane, and there will be a 5-foot bike lane between the through and the right turn lane. It's kind of hard to see, but there's a 10-foot shared use path that runs all along here. There's an existing shared use path along the opposite side on a Sawgrass frontage. Fairway Drive here is an existing private road, and it doesn't have any auxiliary lanes. We'll also be putting a right turn lane and a bike lane between the right and the through up here. Down at our southern site access opposite Mirabella Lane, there's an existing bypass lane now. Since we're coming in creating a fourth leg, we're going to have to make that a left turn lane. So there'll be a left turn lane, a through lane, a bike lane, and a right turn lane at that access. And outside where we're putting in the auxiliary lanes, the travel lanes are required to be 11 foot and the shoulder is required to be 5 foot. That's both sides of the road. So you will have a shoulder to accommodate bikes in each direction on the road, and you'll have 10 foot shared use path on each side of the road.
So what we see today at Sawgrass is what you're going to mimic on the other side?
Correct.
With the exception of turn lanes?
Correct, yeah. And basically, at the, you know, Old Landing Road, there's nowhere to go, you know, once you get beyond this site. So there's no auxiliary lanes geared towards coming up from the bay, basically. Just everything's coming from the all-way stop down.
Okay. And let's talk about the always stop. Did I hear that it's a committed signal?
I wouldn't say it's committed. DLDOT has stated, I believe, in the letter to Lawrence that they expect to install a signal. I believe that is what they'll recommend. I believe they're close to finalizing their recommendations, but we do not have them yet. If I don't want to speak for them, they're here, so if you want to ask them anything direct, but as of right now, what they've said is they expect to lengthen turn lanes. There's actually only one existing turn lane, which is Warrington Road. That left, it needs to be extended today, regardless of this development or any other ever goes through. So the exact length that will be extended will need to be determined, and that's based on if they agree a signal goes in, then that'll be based on the signalized analysis.
Excuse me. Mr. Burton, would you like to direct that question to the DLDOT representatives?
I would. I guess my question is, how far along are you guys on signalization of Warrington and Old Landing?
Sure. So I'm Mark Cote. I'm the assistant director at DLDOT in charge of development coordination. And with me is Bill Brockenbrow, who heads up our traffic impact studies group. So their revised TOA was submitted to us on December 9th of 2014. And we're just about finished our review of that traffic operational analysis, but we're not done yet.
Do you agree with their analysis that they've presented so far tonight?
Um, Yes, substantially. We still are looking at the details of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask you before you leave, since you're here, and this is more for the benefit of the public, could you just talk a little bit about how the signalization agreements work and how the shared cost among the developers and how that all takes place? I mean, this idea of a signal at that intersection has been around for many years. It's not something that is coming up as a result of this project. And I just thought you might like to enlighten us a little bit about how that works.
Sure. So as development is proposed, we look at the impacts of that development to our system. Over the years, other developments along Old Landing Road have developed, and so we've required them to sign signal agreements at that particular intersection, which basically states that when an intersection is warranted and ready to go in, then they are obligated to pay for the cost of that signal. So the developers all pay for the cost of that signal, that DLDOT does not. So during that period of time.
Or more appropriately, the people of the state of Delaware do not. The developers are paying for that.
Correct. Okay. Well, yes, we're all taxpayers.
Right. There you go.
So, yes. So we have four or five signal agreements that have already been signed for that particular intersection. We did come out for a potential roundabout, I think, in 2006 or 2007. That was met with significant opposition. The thinking on roundabouts has changed substantially in terms of public acceptance, but we're still not there yet, so we're only looking at a signal at this time.
Okay. It's not just the signal, it's the entire roadway that they're participating in?
Or is it just the engineer described the improvements along their frontage, which are 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders, turn lanes, and everything like that, are associated with the entrances and their frontage. And then we look off-site at intersections that they would be responsible for to see if they have any deficiencies. So one of the things at the Warrington, Old Landing, Strawberry Way intersection is when you signalize it and look at the traffic analysis, then the turn lane needs to be lengthened, signal would be installed, and then we also look at how that signal will work in terms of phasing, split phase one side, then the other side, or concurrent phasing. So we look at all of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you
very much. Don't go too far. We might need you again. That's why you sit close to the front. Yeah.
Go ahead. And I commend you, too, on the 25-foot buffer that you're doing off the wetlands. But let's talk about the 20-foot buffer that will be that will screen the subdivisions from the neighbors. Hey, what's that buffer look like?
The buffer is just a planted buffer.
But you mentioned a berm.
Well, no, the berm is going to be in front here. We provided enough open space here, ranging between 75 to 50 feet, so that A, we didn't back up, so you don't see the backs of houses or townhouses, but B, if you do get a glimpse of them, you're looking at the front of them, which I think that's what's been preferred in the past from the commission. So, but to kind of soften that even more, we're going to put a landscape berm and trees in here to kind of hide that, which would range anywhere between 3 to 5 feet. Just be a nice landscape berm that'll go pretty much the whole way along Old Landing Road.
Okay.
I mean, that's how come we provided such a gap between the county road 274 and interior roads.
Okay.
Instead of butting them right up to the road.
Okay.
Mr. Burton, if I could just elaborate on that, the code now has a real specific buffer requirement for the perimeter buffer.
Type of plant.
20. Yeah, and then the number, the size, the caliper tree. I mean, it's very specific on the vegetation that you need to include.
And that's the perimeter, which is the 20 feet that that are adjacent to other residential lots.
In addition to the Old Landing Road?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
In addition.
Is your proposed entrance that's going in there, is that at the existing entrance now?
This one here?
Either one of them.
No, I mean, because we lined them up from Sawgrass.
So the entrances that we know now that go into the golf course is no longer going to be there?
Will not, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Just because they're, again, for a number of different reasons, the decel lanes are protected less, so everything lines up.
The
improvements, you know, they have a bypass down at the southern entrance. We're going to have to improve that. But all the improvements that are on Old Landing Road that deal with our site, as well as the multi-use paths, will be constructed and maintained and paid for by the developer.
Okay, and your phasing, again, is what? Tell me how.
Yeah, the phasing is going to start with the northern entrance and be in include a clubhouse, which will consist of both townhouses and single families. And depending on the market, it's either be a phase two or phase two based on the single families or the townhouses. And then ends where the southern entrance is, and of course where Fairway Drive is will be the last two phases.
But you plan on building townhouses and single family homes in the same phase one?
Yes, because, you know, here's your boulevard. It incorporates both single families and towns. And there again, it gives the builder an opportunity to do a little bit of mix and to see where the market's at. But it also includes the clubhouse and amenities as well.
Okay, thank you. It mentions in the front of the book that this is not in a wellhead protection area. But in the back of the book, it mentions that it is in a wellhead protection area.
Well, it's wellhead because of the well for the clubhouse. And, of course, when the clubhouse is removed, the well will be abandoned according to the derrick. So that was...
It's Mr. Marshall's well.
It's his well.
It's his private well.
Yeah, it's for the clubhouse for the golf course. Okay. And when Central Water's in, that'll be discontinued.
Okay. Clarification on the boat docks. Is that they'll be rented? They'll be privately owned? They'll be what are the boat docks? How do the boat docks work? Are they just pull up there, or is somebody going to own one of them?
They're going to be. Was that in the condition? The boat's condition.
I think it hasn't been finalized or anything of that nature. But I think the determination would be it. Number one, it's not a lot of docks. I forget it.
24.
The majority of them would be leased to residents within the community, and then there would be two or maybe four that would just be open, so someone could stop there to pick up people or drop people off or things of that nature. But it would be internal.
But it'd be for the community.
There'd be no outside access to it.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions at this time.
All right. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, gentlemen. And as always, when you follow the excellent homework that Mr. Johnson and Mr. Burton do, I have very few questions to ask, but I do have a few. Mr. Crouch, the stormwater management design that you have for this, has that already been reviewed under the old regulations or the new ones that went in place in January of last year?
No, we have actually met with the Conservation District about this plan when we went through PLUS, and we submitted information to them as part of the old regulations. So this project, when it's going to be constructed and submitted based on the sub-areas and pre- and post requirements, will be going under the old regulations.
All right. And the community, if it's approved, will it be offered as a maintenance-free community, like in the single-family lots? Will the homeowners be doing their maintenance there, or will that come under
sister
auspices of.
Well, as you know, the townhouses, because of their connectivity, that will be some type of general condo type maintenance. Okay, although they may not be condos, they can be fee simple townhouses. But I don't think we've really gotten that far down the road to get into that determination.
Okay. Well, the reason why I ask that is my assumption is that as it operates now is under Mr. Marshall's ownership for long term under the golf course, that it probably has a nutrient management program that he has to log and abide by. Would that be correct?
I think that's correct.
For the golf course?
Yes.
And I'm just wondering how you take out a managed nutrient management program property and then you give it over to a homeowner that is doing their own unsupervised and possibly unschooled, if you will, application of ground fertilizers and things like that, that you may have an adverse reaction to the nearby waterways with a nutrient overload. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, as far as drainage and stormwater management, I mean, you're gonna contain everything on the lot. It's gonna drain into the roads or the drainage, which is gonna be treated in a stormwater management pond, which right now, any treatment that's on the golf course, basically, when it rains, runs off into the marshes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not worried about the golf course as it is now, because I think he has a protocol that he has to load to. I guess what I'm wondering about is the single family lots that.
Mr. Smith, I think you raise a good point, and obviously it could apply to any subdivision.
Yes.
But this is a new subdivision, it's before you. It's certainly something that we would take under consideration from our point of view, that lawn maintenance or at least lawn treatment, fertilizing, would be a community activity as opposed to an individual lot activity. Whether the commission wants to get into that type of detail as a condition, I mean, I leave that to the commission.
No, I don't think we do at this point.
No, but I think it's a good point. I understand what you're raising. And it could be made as a restrictive covenant that, you know, that's what's done, which also maintains the general appearance of the entire development. So it's really actually a good idea.
And the last thing I do, Mr. Johnson brought that up about the superior environment and design ingenuity. I'm coming up a little short in seeing the design ingenuity. Now, I oh, that you've talked about, you know, having the interior road so that you're not having you're not going down and seeing the back of the townhouses and things like that. But I'm wondering, one thing that I liked about the RPCs, which we're starting to see more, is the fact that they provided for a commercial element. And in this case, you're indicating that you're foregoing the opportunity to apply for commercial development in the area, and I would think that with so many rooftops in the area and people migrating up to Route 1 that there perhaps could have been some design ingenuity of saying we've got an opportunity here to have sort of a village center type or something that would attract and serve at least even in a limited capacity some of the commercial wants and wishes of not only your own development but maybe the neighboring developments.
Mr. Smith, I would, I don't disagree with your point. I think that if it's a economically feasible business, I think it might be a good point out there. But I would say we got our hands full right now trying to do this without a commercial element. And if I was up here with a commercial element, I would not want to be here.
Well, I guess we're both entitled to our opinions on that. And speaking of opinions, I would say this, that in regard to the all-way stop, I find that I think the people that use that all-way stop must be some of the nicest people in the world, because when I'm just about ready to give up on humanity, if I go to that all-way stop, whether it be July or January, it works like a Swiss watch.
Mr. Smith, I couldn't agree with you more.
People do not communicate with any kind of hand signals to me, either friendly or adversely, and I go away feeling there's hope.
People patiently take their time. They always defer to the person ahead of them. There's never anybody trying to jump it. And actually, I think it, I always feel like this reflects Sussex County.
It's absolutely amazing.
I agree.
The time capsule. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, well, you're not done. Got Mr. Lank, if he has any questions.
I'd like to pass until I hear the comments of the opposition.
Okay, and Mr. Adams?
Yeah, supportive of everything.
Any questions? Okay, Mr. Counselor, Mr. Robertson.
None, thanks at this time. I may have some as we go through.
All right, then. If you've already taken a seat, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1759 Osprey Point D, LLC? All right, then. I suspect there are a few that want to speak in opposition, and we will start with any attorneys that are present. Is there an attorney representing a group?
There is, Your Honor.
Okay. Come on up, sir.
Chairman.
Your Honor.
Yes.
One thing.
Slip of the tongue.
No honor.
Yeah, right.
I can vouch for that.
Wait a minute. Go ahead.
Well, one thing, too, for the audience, what we always do, the commission always does in situations we'll take at some point a show of hands from individuals that are here in opposition, just so the record reflects a count of the people that were present, so as well as people that were here in favor. So.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Dunn. I'm a Delaware admitted attorney. Upon arriving here, I was informed that with regard to testimony that's going to be offered in opposition to this, that we have statements that I have. I was asked to present them to the commission. I'm not sure if I can present them to you. Included in this is also what Mr. Fuqua referred to with the petition to reject. So if I may approach.
Give them to Mr. Lank.
And they'll be made part of the
and
record.
They'll be made part of the record.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman and Commissioner members, we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about Osprey Point D LLC, the application for rezoning. As I indicated, my name is Bill Dunn. I'm a Delaware admitted attorney. I represent the interests of individuals and families.
Is this your first trip in front of our group?
It is.
Okay. Mr. Robertson is always is concerned about those who represent themselves as attorneys, so he'd like to know what your bar number is.
It's 3342.
Thank you. It's one of those odd traditions we have here at Sussex County Planning and Zoning.
Every new attorney has to give us their bar number. Yeah. But I think Mr. Fuqua's number is 6, I think.
How appreciative are you of that you brought that up? Thank you very much. Yeah. Yes, it's 3342.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Very good. You're admitted.
Thank you. Just to be completely honest, my wife and I own a property in Sawgrass South, and I'm representing this group on a pro bono basis, but the firm for which I work has no involvement in this whatever. I'm doing this individually without any relation to my firm. Having said that, we would ask that the commission decline to recommend approval of the rezoning change at this time, and allow more time for issues to be fully developed. The submission, there are too many open issues at this point to close the record at this time. And given that, we would respectfully request that you keep the record open. The developer's request for a rezoning change should be denied, but should the commission decide to allow petitioner to go forward under an AR1 upzoning or forward the rezoning request to the Sussex County Council, commission at a minimum should act strictly control density preserve the character of the area, require adequate buffers, prevent flooding and adverse impacts on adjacent properties, minimize adverse environmental impacts, mitigate increased traffic, provide for community safety. Proposed plans should be subject to all the requirements of the Code of Sussex County, as amended in state and federal law, as well as sediment and storm water management regulations and best practices. To be clear, the residents that I represent are not opposed to development, per se, as long as it's well planned. Neither are they unmindful of the applicant's right to develop his own property. However, having said that, we do strongly object to the proposed zoning change. Our residents look to this Planning and Zoning Commission and ultimately the Sussex County Council to protect this sensitive area by mandating a project design with lower density, greater open space, appropriate stormwater management, consideration for environmental elements, and mitigation of traffic and safety concerns. The proposed subdivision proposes a number of complex legal, environmental, community impact issues. First, all development in Sussex County is subject to the County Comprehensive Plan Update and Future Land Use Plan, which has the force of law as provided in Sussex County Ordinance Number 1980. Second, the 2008 Comprehensive Plan Update and Future Land Use Plan designates growth areas, including environmentally sensitive developing areas. The Sussex County Planning and Zoning Office has determined that the plan that based upon a review of the future land use map in the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan Update, the Old Landing Golf Course is located in the environmentally sensitive developing area with an area designated as mixed residential area. Third, this environmentally sensitive developing area is designated by the state as investment level 3 under the Delaware strategies for state policies and spending. This means that Sussex County cannot expect the state to support development here with needed infrastructure spending in the near term. For that reason, special scrutiny should be applied to spending decisions and development proposals within these areas to assure that activities are consistent with state and local development and preservation policies. The applicant's filing raises more issues than it resolves under the special scrutiny with respect to flooding, wetlands, and environmental problems, including safety concerns. An illustration in applicant's responses to the information sought in the document entitled Drainage and Flooding. These are questions that are looking for detailed responses where the responses and questions included any storm flood hazard area affected, the box was checked no. Would the proposed project necessitate off-site drainage improvements? The answer is possibly. These questions seek more information concerning stormwater drainage. DENREC regulations require applicants to request a project application meeting to submit stormwater assessment study to the agency for evaluation and do a preliminary sediment and stormwater management plan that includes detailed erosion and sediment control schematic with hydrologic and hydraulic calculations. DENREC then prepares a stormwater assessment report that assesses the feasibility of the project. That report is forwarded to the applicant and the local land use approving agency. On information and belief, these critical requirements have not been met. The fact that the entire parcel, or the majority of the parcel, is in a floodplain should cause caution against overdevelopment here. Additionally, the parcel borders Arnell Creek, contains state and federal wetlands, and serves as an excellent groundwater recharge area. Under the applicable law, the goal is to protect critical natural resources such as inland bays, and guarding against overdevelopment and permanently preserving selected lands. Another concern is that the applicant has yet to provide complete information and documentation pertaining to various issues concerning the floodplain, wetlands, buffer requirements, and other essential requirements, including a summary of the proposed restrictive covenants that must provide for perpetual maintenance of the buffer areas, the maintenance of all streets, roadways, and other rights of way, buffers around the entire perimeter, DENREC has left in recommended to leave intact a minimum 100-foot buffer around the perimeter to protect the function and integrity of the wetlands of this parcel. And then that includes the recorded restrictive covenants that must provide for maintenance of the common areas. Another problem that we are concerned about is the applicant's proposed rezoning and development plan fails because the preliminary plat must depict a forested area, forested and or landscape buffer in accordance with Sussex County Code 99-6J. The submission does not respond to the soils report dated September 8, 2014 that noted the prevalence of soils having features that are unfavorable for building development because they are poorly drained or very poorly drained. An example is 35.7 acres of Falsington loam and areas of tidal marsh or swamp that'll remain extremely wet almost all year. An applicant's response to the plus review leaves completely unanswered the strongly worded recommendations that the applicant should avoid building in the Heidrick Falsington, Broadkill, Manahawkin soil mapping units. In addition, Sussex County Assistant County Attorney states that the site contains wetlands, but minimal use of wetlands and floodplains is an important consideration in review process, and we suggest and hope that the Commission takes that into account. Importantly, the PLUS review strongly recommended that a United States Army Corps of Engineers approved wetlands delineation study be conducted. Commission should require an independent geotechnical report on the effects of building on hydraulic soils, which do not have adequate bearing capacities to support such construction. We assert the Commission should not proceed in the absence of that critical information. Additionally, the traffic load on Old Landing Road should raise a red flag with the Commission as well. In the first place, my clients take a strong exception to the Division of Planning's response to the service level evaluation request filed with the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 17, 2014, wherein that office declined to require a traffic impact study for the application, notwithstanding that the proposed development meets our volume for a traffic impact study. The departure from this procedure, premised on an outdated 2011 traffic study at Old Landing Road, is misplaced. The 2011 traffic study does not take into account the construction of many additional homes and townhomes in Sawgrass South, the homes now being built by Shell and Sawgrass North, 80-plus homes in Redden Ridge, and the additional townhomes in Sterling Crossing. Having mentioned these concerns, I would mentioned to the commission that we have retained a geotechnical engineer, Mr. George Barstar, of GEI Consultants, to assess the stormwater management, flooding, and environmental problems of this project. Mr. Barstar is a professional engineer, registered and licensed in Delaware, with 30 years of relevant geotechnical engineering experience. He's certified professional in erosion and sediment control, has been a certifying engineer and lead designer on a variety of pertinent projects, including erosion and sediment control, construction stormwater assessments, stormwater management design, and soil permeability testing. He has served as an expert witness in design and permitting lawsuits, and presented findings in public hearings. We're confident that his findings will well inform the commission. And if the commission is amenable, I would ask Mr. Barstar to address you with his findings.
Absolutely. Mr. Wheeler, can I ask?
Sure.
Well, two things. One, just for the purposes of the record, because it wasn't, I don't think, brought forth before, there was a letter dated October 8, which was received by Planning and Zoning on October 10th, which contained the proposed requirements for the declaration of restrictions for the covenant or for the development. So that is in the record, and it does cover the perpetual maintenance of the streets, roads, stormwater management areas, sidewalks, erosion, sedimentation control.
Thank you.
So that was done separately, and that came after the memo that I think you referred to that was part of the TAC report. But that is in the record. Can we ask DelDOT to come back up and just explain why a TIS was not required? Only because that's, I'm sure, a question that a lot of people in the audience have, and it would be one that's worth hearing an explanation
if you
for.
Would.
Mr. Dunn, if you would indulge us for a moment, we're going.
Absolutely.
Come on up. How come no traffic impact study? That's the question.
Yes, Bill Brokenbrough here again. In 2011, DelDOT did a traffic study of the old Landing Road area in relation to a proposed development on the Hood property nearby.
Right.
We looked at several intersections that would have been in a traffic impact study for this development. We didn't see a need to look at them again. If I may, with regard to the developments that the gentleman said were omitted, I believe at least some of them were included. I would have to go back and look at the study to tell you which ones were and which ones were not.
So just basically, and for the benefit of the audience, we asked DelDOT to come forward. They're not obviously for the project or against the project. It just, they're the agency that regulates it, so it sort of helps to have their voice heard tonight instead of, you know, somebody advocating for the development from their side. So, but basically with the TIS, it was already done, so there's no need to just duplicate work that was previously done.
The intersections that were not, we did not ask the developer to study now, were addressed in the 2011 study.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much. All right, sir. You may continue with your presentation.
I'm George Marshall with GEI Consultants, and I have a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
I may need a little bit of assistance just getting it set up.
Yeah. Zach, you want to pull your easel out of the way there?
Hey, Lawrence, can you hit the lights? Can you dim the lights, maybe?
Yep, every right.
Okay, now, I understand this is a real challenge now, because the lights are going to go down. It's, what, a quarter to nine?
I've got a flashlight.
I won't say no sleeping, but I will ask for no snoring.
Is that all right?
Where's a 12-year-old when you need
one?
There you go. Now you're coming.
I'm seeing the circle of death, so.
These lights bother you, gentlemen? I'll turn these lights off also, but normally we keep these on.
I'm fine. It's not bothering me.
That's just so the audience can see we're still awake.
Right. That's so they can tell if we're awake or not. That's right. Well, fair enough. We're working for them.
Is this in a format that you can email or provide to the county?
I have left a copy on the desktop here, and so
okay. This
is your computer.
Okay. Lawrence, can you get a copy off there through our IT people so we make it in the record? It's on the computer? Okay.
If not, I'm sure they could email it to you.
Yeah.
You got it.
Again, I'm George Barstow with GEI Consultants, a consulting engineer. And what I'd like to do is tonight just discuss the existing AR zoning and go over the existing allowable use for multi-use family subdivisions.
Excuse me, I do have to ask you to do one procedural thing for us. You're obviously testifying as an expert, so if you could tell us what your credentials are so we can put those on the record.
Okay. Yes. Again, my name is George Barstow. I'm a Delaware licensed professional engineer, license number 16194. Sound the whether I need that or not. I have 30 years experience in erosion sedimentation control design, stormwater management, site development, and I'm a master's degree in geotechnical engineering and a bachelor's degree in civil engineering with an environmental engineering emphasis.
Great. Thank you. Just needed to get that on the record.
Sure. So again, I'm going to discuss the existing zoning, and that I believe that the change in zoning is not necessary to facilitate a multi-dwelling unit and full development of the site. And then I want to go through some of the issues associated with environmental sensitive district overlay and the implementation of the stormwater management regulations that were promulgated beginning of last year, or effective beginning of last year, and how they also impact the site development, and how I believe those issues are of such a nature that approval of this plan as presently proposed is premature, and that additional studies and probably going back to the drawing table is appropriate. Okay. Most of this information has already been presented. I do want to point out that the entire site has that environmental sensitive developing district overlay where there is special scrutiny for environmental concerns.
You know, I'm going to have to object because if this is going to be based on that, this site is not all in the environmental sensitive district. Only a small portion of it is.
Okay, well, as you know, this is not a court proceeding, so we don't really have...
Well, then I'll remove my objection, but I will state, as Lawrence's letter indicates, 60 to 75% of this is in the mixed residential area. The remainder is in the environmentally sensitive area.
I appreciate that, and that, as you know, in this process... there will often be statements that we disagree with, and there will be things that are said that we know are factually incorrect, and we won't necessarily stop you every time, although sometimes I will.
Is the whole thing in the environmentally sensitive development district, the overlay covers it all, and it's partially mixed use?
No, that is incorrect.
Well, that's, your drawing has the hash marks over the whole thing, which is environmentally sensitive.
If you look at the exhibit I submitted,
right,
in the growth area.
Okay, hold on a minute. Listen, I'm going to run this hearing. Okay, let's make that clear from the get-go. Anybody else shouts out anything else, you're going to be invited to leave. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I want you to take a minute, explain to our council. What you're suggesting. He'll make a determination, and then we're going to proceed.
We'll take it under advisement, but I just want to make sure I'm hearing both sides of it. I mean, because that's all hashed.
If you go to the plan itself, and obviously this could be subject to different opinions.
Right.
But the growth areas, the plan states there are seven types of growth areas.
Right.
It then lists them.
Right.
There's a mixed residential area and there's an environmentally sensitive development area.
Right.
They're mutually exclusive. One's one, the other one's the other one.
I don't know that it matters, but... I mean, I read that, well, anyway, the map that you provided shows that the whole area is cross-hatched with environmentally sensitive developing area, and it also shows that part of it is mixed use. I mean, I don't, because the overlay is environmentally sensitive, I think you can have both of them. That's why I don't know that it matters. But anyway, let's go ahead. We can go forward and get it clarified through Lauren.
Yeah, what I would ask is that we show... the same courtesy to the opposition, those who are opposed to the application, as we did to the applicant. So I'm just going to ask you if you would hold your comments. And Mr. Robertson, I know you're paying attention, and if there is something in the testimony that is incorrect or conflicts with the law, we're going to trust you to let us know about it. Okay.
I should say that the basis for my understanding is I looked at the Delaware zoning map online from the website. That's dated May 2013, and I understand that subsequent to amendment, et cetera, but that's that's the reference source that I use for
okay.
this determination.
All right, we understand. Sure.
And also that there's a, as well the flood pro district overlay in the, within the flood zone, which is covers a large portion of the site as well. And Mr. Krause already described this area. I do want to point out that there are the 55.05 acres of passive open space is going to be kind of the point of my contention and where I'm really going to be focusing a lot of my comments, that I believe that number and that total acreage is probably going to be on the low side of what's actually going to be required for this site. Again, under the existing regulations, there is permissible as the permitted use multi-lot development with the 2 per acre or nominal 2 per acre standard lot size plus the cluster development option, and that it meets the criteria for that of being a site, as far as I understand, where the central sewer system and the water supply is going to be in place, and that we're obviously over 10 acre size, so that the cluster development is a permissible use under the existing zoning, so that there really isn't a relief required for the zoning change to fully develop this site for residential purposes. In fact, I did a back of the envelope type calculation of what the site could yield, looking at the total project area, and I excluded from this, in addition to the wetlands, the hydric soils at the site, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later. But basically, my presentation is going to be that those portions of the site are really unsuitable for the development based on where we are presently with environmental sensitive area and the stormwater management regulations. And then looking at consistent with what we have for the existing site, about another 30% allowance for stormwater management, roads, rights of way, easements, taking about approximately 23 acres, keeping the club's house, that leaves the available area for lots to about 46 or so acres. And that would give you about 202 units using its 10,000 square foot size, or approximately 269 units for going down to the 7,500 square feet lot size. Thirdly, if you're developing it as a full single lot development with the 20,000 square foot size using existing zoning, we can still reach about 100 units on this site. So one thing I want to, again, focus on with the zoning change and also looking at the suitability of the land, the subdivision development is really an issue where there's flooding and proper drainage, adverse earth formations, and I would include in that adverse soil conditions or other features that it would be reasonably harmful to development, and such lands need to be set aside for those particular uses. And I believe that this proposal doesn't adequately address the site constraints of flooding, drainage and stormwater management, full wetland impacts as identified in the PLUS review, and in addition to some other items that were included in the PLUS review. So again, we have approximately 50 acres of passive active open sites, passive and active open sites. But the 50.5 acres is really for the passive sites, looking at the environmentally sensitive, presently includes environmentally sensitive areas and stormwater management features. But it really doesn't include the wetland setbacks that recommended by DEDREC, the hydric soils, and also the stormwater management requirements that are effective under the current regulations. With the wetlands, that has been discussed somewhat already, and frankly, my understanding, based on the earlier testimony, is that there has been a detailed
delineation that has been submitted and now is, I guess, in the midst of being approved by the Army Corps. However, my position is still that a fuller delineation of everything needs to be done on the site, especially establishing the limits of hydric soils and doing confirmation of the wetlands with all survey locations. And again, I'm not sure exactly, based on the additional earlier testimony of Mr. Krause, the full extent of what has been done subsequent to my awareness of all this information, but the earlier record had information where DEDREC was requested to go out and look at the site, and that the access had been denied. And so one of the things I'm recommending is that a full delineation of the entire site with DEDREC be present, or at least coordinated, fully coordinated with them, be conducted. Again, this is just a graphic showing the state wetlands, but to kind of demonstrate where we are on the site. Yet, this has already been, addressed earlier in the hearing about the 100-foot setback. The only thing I would like to say that is, because we're up against the creek, and we're now dealing with a continuous environment of biodiversity and the flora and fauna going all the way from the water all the way up. It's that additional buffer is probably more warranted than in an area where of isolated upland wetlands that you have across the street.
Can I ask a question on, because we hear that at the commission all the time.
Sure.
And it's sort of a rhetoric question, but if it's that important, how come that's not a regulation or requirement of DLDOT? Unfortunately, the commission's faced with, DEDREC.
Right, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeling. You know, that's a request that appears in every single PLUS report that the county gets, and probably Kent County gets and Newcastle County gets.
That big a deal, why isn't it at all? My goodness, those people can do anything they want.
Yeah, you know, and it's, everybody would like a lot of things, but, you know, the county has to also look at what's, you know, legally required, and if it's that important, how come it's not ever been legally required by DEDREC?
And I really can't comment on DEDREC's reasoning. I've been trying for 30 years trying to figure out their reasoning and coming up blank on a number of issues. But I will say, in this particular case, due to the other constraints, it almost becomes moot when we get to the next slide, talking about the hydric soils. Again, I'm going to actually refer to DEDREC in the PLUS review, talk about the use of hydric soils, that they act as basically nature's sponge for retaining water, mitigating surface water, runoff, and flooding. They are related to wetlands and are environmentally sensitive soils, so they have limited infiltration capacity, high water table, and they're identified as severely limited for development. And it's my opinion that the hydric soil areas should be excluded from development because of the environmental concerns and ultimately also how they're going to interplay with development of the stormwater management system. That said, that really does knock out a large portion of the site. The doesn't really show as clearly on this graphic, but so I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm just going to walk over the screen.
Sure, help yourself.
The hydric soils are in red, and it also includes this yellow area, which is shown in the original, but it's a little bit difficult, almost looks like the green. So you can see that a large portion of this site would then be excluded from development and use. And this is where I get to the whole idea of this really needs to be revisited. So again, we want to talk about stormwater management. Basically, my view of the plans, and I guess it's consistent with Mr. Krause's earlier statement, is that the developed plans appear to be just addressing the prior stormwater regulations and not the current stormwater regulations. And where they seem to be addressing the peak flow concerns. In fact, Mr. Krause, if I remember, a couple times mentioned the 2, 10, and 100-year storms, looking at, assuming he means looking at the peak development, post-development versus pre-development peak flows comparison, and making sure that those are addressed in addition to the implemented regulations. However, my understanding is that this development is subject to the sediment and stormwater regulations. The department issued guidance describing how it was going to be interpreted with respect to grandfathering, and the one small bullet there, it's not grandfathered by having filed a preliminary sediment stormwater management plan by beginning of last year. That was kind of the timeline that's included in the guidance for Sussex projects in Sussex County that would be administered by the Sussex County Conservation District. So we're now in a whole different world, because in addition to those stormwater management peak flow conditions, we now have to look at stormwater designs that reduce runoff, mimic natural watershed, hydraulic processes, and have things like this connection of impervious surfaces and conserving and answering the natural flow paths, and basically bringing the development of stormwater to a whole nother level, which is not contemplated in the present application. Yeah, the stormwater plan, I'm sure you're probably aware, is a three-step process with the project application meeting, where the applicant puts together a stormwater assessment study. They have a pre-application meeting where they basically hash out what's really doable at the site, what's the best approach, and then the agency prepares a stormwater assessment report and then provides it to Planning Commission or other appropriate reviewing agency. And then you go to the preliminary sediment stormwater management plan and then the final stormwater sediment management plan. And I do want to point out that that final sediment stormwater management plan does address some of the issues that were raised earlier tonight with the operation of the maintenance plant being a requirement for that. So the issues with long-term maintenance of the site post-development are included in the, would be addressed by the application in its final form. And they, again, in the absence of the information being available, I kind of looked at quick and dirty review of the stormwater project application meeting stormwater assessment report. The report does have a number of items. You can see there are seven items, and there's also a checklist at the bottom for mitigation measures being taken. What I did was I basically went through this second page of the stormwater checklist and kind of identified the areas of concern. They break it up into three areas, three levels, with no engineering, minimal engineering controls, moderate engineering controls, and what they call severe or extensive engineering controls being required. The first one deals with soils, and of the checklist, there's a lot, some soil issues that are really going to be an issue at the site. There's several soils that have low permeability, high water table, and limitations. The hydric soils, in particular, the hydric soils are excess of 50 acres on the site. Those soils are identified as having very limited excavated ponds due to water table, because the water table is so high in this area. It's limited for a pond or reservoir areas, perhaps poorly drained soils. Again, the depth of the water table is presumed to be less than the 3.1 feet. The flood frequency classification, ponding frequency classes, and the very rated for very limited for shallow excavation. So all these factors come into saying yes, this is a severe issue that has to be addressed, and how you're going to address these things is going to be a major impact. Same with the runoff potential. One of the things, they look at two basic things, the change in land cover due to removal of trees at an impervious area. And the existing trees on the golf course are going to be removed. There's no plan to, as far as I can tell, to maintain and keep the existing trees, as well as the proposed impervious area, I guess, is including houses, probably going to, as presently proposed, we've estimated to be about 31 acres. So that, again, falls within the moderate engineering issue. So it's going to have to be addressed. And this is one of the checklist items again. Get the water resource protection, which is one of the critical site issues. With site conditions could adversely affect the runoff reduction, air pollutant loading reductions. I know Mr. Krause already talked about how he's planning to address the TMDL issues, but do want to really focus on the runoff reduction. Now, under new regulations, there's the runoff event protection event, the runoff event protection volume, and that is basically the one-year storm, and you need to now be able to not just handle the peak flows, but also now accommodate that the total flow associated with that storm running off the site doesn't exceed pre-development conditions. And how are you going to do that? What kind of mitigation is there? I mean, the regulations specifically call canopy interception, surface recharge, evaporation, rainfall harvesting, engineer infiltration, evapotranspiration, or basically just letting the vegetation take care of everything. And that's going to be difficult given the site constraints that you have. Now, the code also requires that if you're going to do recharge, that you'd have site-specific investigations. That is a regulatory requirement. That, in my mind, is one of the first things that really needs to be done here, is really to assess what the infiltration potential is at the site in the various areas so that you can then design the stormwater management system to accommodate the existing site conditions to handle this. And then once there, they kind of back out to see how much area you're going to need for stormwater management and then develop the site accordingly. And that hasn't been done. And that's one of the things I'm kind of really honing in with why I'm saying you really need to not approve this and need to really basically send it back to the drawing board so that it can be addressed.
I have to say that I'm getting the impression that you are expecting a full design package at this stage of the application. You do understand that this is just a public hearing to determine whether or not there should be this development there. And all of the things that you've said are all very true, and they all have to be done. Typically, that level of detail wouldn't be done until there was some permission given to at least do a development there. They're asking for 350 units. All of the things that you've said here are very important and will definitely impact that. They may end up with less, maybe much less, because of those regulations, But to suggest that all of this design work would be done prior to this this point really isn't particularly practical. I would just suggest to you. I'm just going to let you proceed.
Okay, with all due respect, what I
can I just
right
follow
now,
up on that too, just because I want you to address this question as well, is we're not just talking about a particular development plan. We're also talking about the change in zone from AR1 to to MR. So, I'm not following how this impacts that change in zone.
Okay.
So, maybe if you could tailor to that too.
All right.
Because I've got to advise the commission when they make a decision one way or another whether the grounds for that decision is based on facts that frankly support a decision one way or the other. So.
And I. Well, first let me address the chairman's question, and that is what I'm discussing right now is just the requirements of this the stage one, and the stage one is to be completed, and that information is supposed to be going to you in order to for you to make a decision as to whether or not to go forward. And what I'm saying is that needs to happen. And you need to have this analysis done that the Conservation District will say, yeah, this site, this project's doable. There's big issues, there's small issues, so that you have that under advisement before you make this decision that you're looking at tonight.
Thank you.
With respect to your question, Mr. Robertson, I see this as right now they're looking at doing this large project with the 350 units, whichever it is, I can't remember exactly. And that's what they're proposing, and they're proposing this layout. And in order to say, does this layout make sense? We have to step back and say, is this project doable to begin with? And also, you know, where are you so that when you have this conceptual stormwater management plan, it reflects what the current requirements are, and therefore you can then make a decision as to whether or not any development's going to be there or what kind of development. And frankly, if there's just those three areas, maybe it makes sense to just have a limited, a cluster housing here is probably the best use. It may not be. I don't know. I haven't gone there. I don't work for these people. I can't give you that. But so that's kind of where I'm coming from is once you have that information, then you can really develop what they envision as the best use for this property and make their make that decision. So it's premature to do anything prior to that. So, there are offset provisions and all that kind of stuff that sometimes are identified during this pre-application meeting. So if they say, I have other areas that I'm going to take care of or do things with. So those items can be in place prior to coming to you. And so these are kind of the issues that get resolved, included a discussion of the discharge points. And because we're up in the tidal zone and where we'll be discharging through wetlands, there are backwater issues that are addressed. So that falls into that category of significant engineering is going to have a significant engineering rating. So again, my conclusion then is basically site's potential for our development is limited by the existing environmental constraints and really any decision now is premature until you've gone through that process for stormwater management and taking into account the presence of hydraulic soils on the site, which would really impact the design compared to what's presently proposed if those areas are excluded. And that may have to be the case in order to properly address the stormwater management concerns under the new regulations. So my final recommendation is really prior to the submission of a revised revised plan coming to you, they really need to go back and look at this, make sure that all these environmental concerns are properly addressed, including having that little checklist and you having the checklist from the soil erosion and sedimentation control. Sussex County Conservation District.
Okay.
And that concludes my presentation. And I believe the next speaker is Rich Morganti, who's the president of the Landing Woods Owners Association, who has additional items to.
Before the next person comes up, thank you very much. Mr. Crouch, I want you to come up here and answer a question for me, if you can.